And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West. The most haunted city in the country. Well, today is part of early voting. We were the very first ones in line for curbside voting. Quite an interesting process. Went off without a hitch as far as we were concerned. Well, today's October 15th, 288th day of the year. Leap year is 289th. 77 days remain till the end of the year. In 1066, King Harold II was killed at the Battle of Hastings. And Edgar the Atheling was proclaimed King of England by the Witan. Now, he never took the crown. And 2 months later, ceded power to William the Conqueror. My ancestor. 1211, Battle of the Rhindacus. The Latin Emperor Henry of Flanders defeats the Nicene Emperor Theodore I Lascaris. 1529, Siege of Vienna ends with Austria routs the invading Ottoman forces. That ended the Ottoman Empire's European expansion. Had it not, we all might be speaking Turkish. 1582, the adoption of the Gregorian calendar eventually leads to near universal adoption. 1783, the Montgolfier Brothers hot air balloon makes the first human ascent. The pilot was Jean-Francois Pelletier de Lozier. 1793, Queen Marie Antoinette of France is tried and convicted of treason. Now, frankly, that was a foregone conclusion. Just as today, accusation equals guilt. 1809, the Viceroy of the Rio de la Plata, Baltasar Hidalgo de Cisneros, opens the port of Buenos Aires to trade with nations other than Spain. 1815, Napoleon begins his exile on St. Helena in the South Atlantic Ocean. 1863, American Civil War, the H.L. Hunley, the first submarine to sink a ship, sinks. Kills its inventor and the crew on board.
Motion detected at the front door.
1864, the Union garrison of Glasgow, Missouri surrenders to Confederates. 1878, the Edison Electric Light Company begins operating. 1879, the Segura River in southeastern Spain floods. Kills almost 1,100 people. 1888, the From Hell letter allegedly sent by Jack the Ripper is received by investigators. You know, there's many stories about Jack the Ripper. And the question is, did he die? Did he commit suicide? Did he leave for the States? There's many, many possibilities about what happened to the man. Assuming it was a man. 1910, Airship America was launched from New Jersey in the first attempt to cross the Atlantic by a powered aircraft. 1917, Dutch dancer Mata Hari is executed by France for espionage, though it later turned out she was not a spy. 1923, the German Rentenmark is introduced in Germany to counter hyperinflation in the Weimar Republic. 1928, the airship Graf Zeppelin completes its first transatlantic flight, lands at Lakehurst, New Jersey in the U.S., 1932, Tata Airlines, later changing its name to Air India, makes its first flight. 1939, New York Municipal Airport, later renamed LaGuardia Airport, is dedicated. It was named LaGuardia after Fiorello LaGuardia, the mayor of New York City. 1940, President Luis Campanas of Catalonia, executed by the Francoist government. 1944, Germany replaces the Hungarian government after it announces an armistice with the Soviet Union. 1945, the former Premier of Vichy France, Pierre Laval, is executed for treason. Of course, had the Germans won, they would have been praising him as a far-sighted leader. 1951, Mexican chemist Luis Samiroff Montes completes the synthesis of norazisterone, the basis for early oral contraceptive. 1954, Hurricane Hazel devastates the eastern seaboard of North America. Kills 95, causes massive floods as far north as Toronto. 1956, Fortran, the first modern computer language, is first shared with the coding community. 1965, Vietnam War, draft cards burned during an anti-war rally by the Catholic worker movement, resulting in the first arrest under a new law. 1966, the Black Panther Party is created by Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. 1979, supporters of the Malta Labor Party ransack and destroy the Times of Malta building and other locations associated with the Nationalist Party. 1979, a coup d'etat in El Salvador overthrows President Carlos Humberto Romero and begins the 12-year-long Salvadorian Civil War that has led to so many undocumented immigrants coming to this country. 1989, Wayne Gretzky becomes the all-time leading point scorer in the NHL. And his daughter is a stunning young lady. 1989, eight of those convicted in South Africa's Rivonia trial are released from prison. Now, for those that are not familiar with the Rivonia trial, it took place between October 6th and 1963 and June 12th, 1964. Led to the imprisonment of Nelson Mandela and others among the accused who were convicted of sabotage and sentenced to life at the Palace of Justice in Pretoria. It took its name from Rivonia, the suburb of Johannesburg, where the leaders had been arrested and the documents discovered at Lily's Leaf Farm, which is privately owned by Arthur Goldreich. Various people and groups, including the African National Congress,
motion detected at the front door,
have been using the farm as a hideout. Among others, Nelson Mandela moved onto the farm in October 1961. He masqueraded as a gardener and cook. Took the name David Matsumayai, which means David the Walker. Well, the Rivonia raid was considered a stunning and welcome development by most of South Africans, a major breakthrough in the nation's fight against terrorism. Of course, Mandela went on to become a god among men. Okay. 1990, Soviet Union leader Mikhail Gorbachev was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts to lessen Cold War tensions and open up his nation. 1991, the Oh My God particle, an ultra-high-energy cosmic ray measured at 40 million times that of the highest energy protons produced in a particle accelerator, is observed at the University of Utah High-Res Observatory in Dugway Proving Ground in Utah. 1994, the Clinton administration returns Haiti's first democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, to the island. 1995, Marco Campos dies in a race at the Circuit de Neves Magny-Cours, the only driver ever killed in the International Formula 3000 Series. 1995, Saddam Hussein is re-elected president of Iraq through a referendum. 1997, the Cassini probe launches from Cape Canaveral on its way to Saturn. 2001, NASA's Galileo spacecraft passes within 112 miles of Jupiter's moon, Io. 2003, China launches Shenzhou 5, its first manned space mission. 2005, a planned neo-Nazi protest against African-American street gangs sets off a riot in Toledo, Ohio. 29 people are arrested. 2006, the 6.7 Kiholo Bay earthquake rocks Hawaii, causes property damage, injuries, landslides, power outage, and the closure of Honolulu International Airport. 2007, 17 activists in New Zealand are arrested in the country's first post-9/11 anti-terrorism raids. 2008, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closes down 733.08 points, the second worst percentage drop in the Dow's history. 2013, a 7.2 Bohol earthquake strikes the Philippines. At least 215 are known to have died. Could have been more. 2016, 197 nations amend the Montreal Protocol to include a phase-out of hydrofluorocarbons. You know, with all these high-sounding ideas, it's all well and good to say, I support this and I support that. But when push comes to shove, do they really have the intestinal fortitude to tighten their belt and take the plunge? Usually no. Holidays and observances. Anniversary of the 1987 coup d'etat in Burkina Faso. Breast Health Day in Europe. Christian Feast Day. Bruno of Quefert. Kuan of Ashkrag. Teresa of Avila. Tekla of Kitzenzin. Early Stay on Which Heroes Day can fall. March 21st is the latest. Celebrated on the third Monday in October in Jamaica. Earliest Day on Which Mother's Day can fall. October 21st is the latest. Celebrated on the third Monday in October in Argentina. Earliest Day on Which Sweetest Day can fall. October 21st is the latest. Celebrated on the third Saturday in October in the Great Lakes region. In Tunisia, it's Evacuation Day. Global Hand Washing Day. They actually give instruction online of how to wash your hands. International Day of Rural Women in the United Nations. King Father's Commemoration Day in Cambodia. National Latino AIDS Awareness Day in the U.S. Pregnancy and Infant Loss Remembrance Day in Canada, U.S., the U.K., and Italy. In Brazil, it's Teacher's Day. In the U.S., it's White Cane Safety Day. And it's also World Students Day. Let's see if we got anything else. .533, Byzantine general Belisarius makes his formal entry into Carthage, having conquered it from the Vandals. .1520, King Henry VIII of England orders bowling lanes at Whitehall. .1522, Emperor Karel I names Hernan Cortes governor of Mexico. .1552, Khanate of Kazan is conquered by troops of Ivan Grozny. Let's see what else. .1598, Spanish general strategist Bernardino de Mendoza occupies Fort Ryan. .1680, Asser Levy is granted a butcher's license for kosher meat in New Amsterdam. That later became New York. .1674, the Torsaka witch trials began. They're the largest witch trials in Sweden. 71 are beheaded and burned. .1705, the English fleet under Lord Peterborough occupies Barcelona. .1756, the Saxon army surrenders to Prussia. In 1764, Edward Gibbon sees a group of friars singing in the ruined Temple of Jupiter in Rome. That inspired him to begin work on the history of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, which still sells today. .1789, first presidential tour. George Washington goes to New England. .1816, Lord Byron views the love letters of the Lucrezia Borgia and poet Pietro Bembo in Milan and declares them the prettiest love letters in the world. Byron, of course, was in many respects a sandwich short of a picnic. .1827, Charles Darwin admitted to Christ College in Cambridge. .1842, Karl Marx becomes editor-in-chief of Rheinische Zeitung. He was the the best known communist philosopher. 1860, 11-year-old Grace Bedell writes to Abraham Lincoln, advising him to grow a beard. And he did. 1866, the Great Fire of Quebec destroys 2,500 homes.
Motion detected at the front door.
You know, it's interesting how many people, especially with early voting going on, come by and try to get you to vote for their particular candidate. In 1880, Mexican soldiers killed Victorio, one of the greatest Apache military strategists. 1881, the first American fishing magazine, The American Angler, is published. 1894, Captain Alfred Dreyfus arrested and accused of espionage in France. The French, when in doubt, accuse him of espionage. 1895, Henry Perkey patents a machine he developed with William Ford for the preparation of cereals for food. We know it is shredded wheat. 1897, King Leopold II takes the Belgian crown. 1904, when the Russians and the Japanese get into it, the Russians driven back by the Japanese in the Battle of Shaho. Both sides suffer severe casualties, the Japanese 16,000, the Russians 60,000. 1918, the best laid plans of mice and men go astray. In 1918, the British Q ship, that was an intelligence gathering ship, the Cymric, sinks the British submarine J6. 1924, Calvin Coolidge declares the Statue of Liberty a national monument. 1928, the German dirigible Graf Zeppelin lands in Lakehurst, New Jersey. The Hindenburg disaster ended the age of Zeppelins. See, the problem is, we have the control of helium, and they had to use a more flammable material to inflate their airships. 1937, Ernest Hemingway published his novel, To Have and Have Not. 1940, on this date, The Great Dictator, a satiric social commentary film by and starring Charlie Chaplin, is released. 1941, Hideki Tojo appointed Prime Minister of Imperial Japan. And he served in that position during most of World War II. And in 1944, the Arrow Cross Party, which is very similar to Hitler's Nazi Party, takes over power in Hungary. Now on this date in 1951, I Love Lucy, starring Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, debuts on CBS. See if there's anything else. I think that's got it. We have been talking about haunted locations in El Paso. The most haunted location is El Paso High School. And we're still talking about it. Well, as I said, the 1987 track team had won the championship in San Antonio or Austin. When they got back, it was 2 or 3 in the morning, and they went into the locker room, and they heard the school fight song, cheerleaders cheering, people yelling, stamping their feet, and thought it was a surprise pep rally since they had won. But they discovered the auditorium was empty and the doors were locked. The lights were off. First time the coach went. Second time the whole team went with him. And they opened the doors and he and the students searched the auditorium for anything or anyone that could have made the sounds they heard, and they didn't find anything. Once again locking up, the coach and the students returned to the locker room, got their possessions, and left. Well, perhaps all those who are destined to spend eternity at El Paso High School are merely furnishing Coach McKillop and his track team the heroes' welcome they were entitled to. They became state champions. Now, Bertie Barnhart, the El Paso High attendance clerk, has told others when she's in the building alone, she hears water in the bathrooms being turned on and off, and the lights are also turned on and off. Maggie Duran, as an English teacher at El Paso High, has filled this position for over 20 years. She's convinced that there are ghosts in the building, but she said she likes them and they leave her alone. She'd been working in her office alone. She heard the sounds of somebody sitting down in a wooden chair. If you've ever sat in one, you know it makes unmistakable creaking sounds. And she said this sound is also heard during the school day. But the students take it in stride, perfectly content to allow the ghost to join them for class. She said she's long been told there's an ancient Indian graveyard where the parking lot is located now. And both Toby Tovar and
motion detected at the front door.
And Maggie Duran have confirmed that arrowheads, shells, and petrified wood has been found on school property. Some of the more unusual finds that have been made are in a small museum the Alumni Association has set up on the first floor of the building. Now, Maria Martinez is the bookroom clerk. Her job is to issue textbooks for the various classes to the students. And the book room is located directly across the hall from Toby Tovar's classroom, and he's been made no secret of the fact there's something strange going on in that room. According to a story in the 2000 El Paso High School Spur, Maria Martinez is quoted as saying she believes the school's haunted. She's adamant. She's got a ghost in the book room. She said her computer will turn on all of a sudden and books tend to fall off shelves. She thinks the ghost is just trying to get her attention. And sometimes she says the book room is filled with strange noise that can't be explained. On one occasion, she said she heard a girl talking when there's nobody else in the room or anywhere near the room. She's had picture frames broken. She's seen them fall off the wall. All these sounds and unexplained activity frightened her at first, but now she's accustomed to the other presences. According to Toby Tovar, Ms. Martinez has told him that occurrences in her room are worse when he's not at school, as if the spirit is expressing its displeasure at his absence. Then there's the unusual experience of English teacher Jerry Denny. His encounter was written up in an article in the 2000 yearbook. According to Jerry Denny, there were three of them working in the auditorium one summer building a set for a summer musical. A table had been set up behind the curtain where a box of tools had been placed for their use. And at the moment in question, the three of them were working together toward the front of the stage. All of a sudden, there was a tremendous crash that startled them so much that for a period, none of them could move. It was as if they were glued to the floor. They knew they were the only people in the auditorium. It was impossible for anybody else to have gotten in without them being aware of it. Finally, they gathered the courage to look for the source of the sounds, and when they went behind the curtains, they found the contents of the toolbox had been dumped on the floor. But the table still sitting upright where they had put it. And the box was so heavy it had taken four people to move the table with the tools into the position where it now sat. There's no way the box could have fallen from the center of the table to the floor without the table also turning over. This incident so upset the group that they left. According to that same article in the yearbook, the ghosts don't respect either rank or privilege. Assistant Principal Hector Munoz is quoted in the article saying he'd been on a job for 2 months when he had his first encounter. He said he'd been working in his office one morning when he heard somebody knock on the door. He called for him to come in. When nobody responded, he got up and opened the door to the hall, but there was no one in sight. He said this went on for about 2 weeks every morning before it finally stopped. So the question is, were the ghosts trying to get his attention, or maybe this was their way of welcoming him to the facility? And the final story from that 2,000-year book from Celia Maza, a student at El Paso High. According to Ms. Maza's story, when she was a freshman, her algebra teacher was Ms. Haiti. She said Ms. Haiti had a plant sitting on top of her filing cabinet, and she told him that the plant had a mind of its own. Now, the students, of course, had trouble believing such a statement. Ms. Haiti said that plant would suddenly fly across the room. And as she made that statement, the plant flew across the room. Students were shocked, but after that, they believed the ghost stories. Now, the building is steeped in history, but it hides its secrets well. During modifications to the auditorium, workers removed the steps leading up to the stage and found hidden, one or two books per step, an entire set of a Catholic encyclopedia hidden beneath the steps. Both Toby Tovar and Andy Salcedo, former head custodian, confirmed that incident had happened. This set of books is complete, lavishly illustrated, and frankly a real treasure, and probably very valuable. So how did the volumes get inside those steps? Who put them there? And why were they put in such unusual hiding places? Well, El Paso High custodians quit their duties at 9 p.m., so unless somebody is working late after this hour, that huge building is deserted, the lights are out, and the alarms are set. And the building is considered completely secure. Well, El Paso High School, it can never be said with certainty the building is deserted and secure. A number of people have reported seeing lights on the fourth floor in the early hours of the morning. One student said after a party, he and some friends had driven by the building and seen a light that resembled a television been allowed to stay on after the station has gone off the air for the night. And periodically, he said, they'd see a figure walk between the light source and the window. He said they called the EPSD police who came out and checked the building. And after searching the fourth floor, nobody was found or was any light or television found to be on. I talked to Sergeant Jeffrey Allen of the EPSD Police Department. He confirmed what the young man had said about the report of the television and somebody walking around. Officers searched for this television intruder twice that night, but found nothing either time. Teachers working late report lights flipping on off on the fourth floor. Many people have reported hearing the toilets flush on the fourth floor, and on a number of occasions after hours, the water in the restroom is turned on, allowed to run till it overflows and runs into the hallway. In spite of continual investigations, nobody's ever found to be at fault for this. I'd also heard that two EPSD officers had responded to an intrusion alarm, arrived, seen lights on the fourth floor. Along with the head custodian, they began to search the building. As they were climbing the stairs to the fourth floor, both officers swore they felt somebody coming down the stairs and pass between them, brushing up against one of the officers. But there was nobody else on the stairs but them, and they didn't hear anyone or see anyone. But something or someone did brush up against them. There was no question about that. Well, based on this report, I made arrangements to interview some of the members of the EPISD Police Department. But first, I had an appointment with the head custodian that had been arranged by Mr. Tovar. Mario Reyes was the current custodian at the time. He'd been working at El Paso High for 17 years. As he's had experiences with spirits in the building several times, usually on the fourth floor on the science department side of the building. He said there's the spirit of a cheerleader who he was told had committed suicide now haunts the fourth floor. He said that he also had encounters with the spirits of a football player and a coach in the auditorium on the second floor. Now, Mr. Reyes did not appear to be making up what he was telling me. He struck me as a thoughtful, introspective type of individual. And I had the very clear impression he was the type that would tell you what he had seen or heard, and he didn't care if you liked what he said or not. Like the others I met at El Paso High, after a half-hour conversation, I had no doubts regarding his firm belief he was telling me what he'd seen. Well, about that football player and coach who he says haunt the auditorium, he had an unusual story to relate. The auditorium is on the second floor across from the principal's office and accessed by several sets of double doors that are kept locked when not in use. Reyes said that he had a need to retrieve something from the auditorium, so he let himself in using his passkey and turned on the lights. First thing he saw was two individuals, a young man who looked like a student and an older man. They were sitting side by side in the first row of the bleachers. Now, knowing nobody was supposed to be in the auditorium at this time, he approached them asking who they were and what they were doing there. He said they didn't respond to his questions, but rather they just slowly vanished right in front of his eyes. He said he'd taken a psychic through the building to do a seance. The psychic, her name is Lady D, told him there were a number of spirits in the building. She went on to say the spirits who lived in the basement were upset because the students didn't take them seriously. And Mr. Reyes said that Mr. Tovar had a club for students, and the club would hold their initiations in the basement. Reyes said when he told Mr. Tovar what the psychic had said, Tovar had stopped the initiations to keep from offending the ghost. Now, the spirits on the fourth floor told the psychics they knew all about Mr. Reyes and knew things about him that surprised him. Through the psychic, he asked if the spirits had been to his house, as his wife had had some experiences that were hard to explain. Now, I might explain at this point in time, the head custodian lives on the school grounds. In fact, prior to Mr. Reyes, the head custodian lived in an apartment in the basement of the building. But more recently, separate quarters had been constructed elsewhere on the school grounds. The psychic responded she had been told that two of the spirits had in fact been to his house, and one hid some rings and other small items Mr. Reyes and his wife had been searching for and couldn't find. Through the psychic, the spirits told Reyes to remove some drawers from the dresser in his bedroom, and they'd find the missing items. Well, he confirmed to me that same evening he and his wife followed the instructions given by the spirits, and they actually found the missing items exactly where he'd been told they would be located. He said the spirits told Lady D to tell him that he should get out and relax occasionally, as if he didn't, he'd wind up joining them when he dies. He said he lived on the property for 11 years and admits that he's totally dedicated to his job, spending many more hours in the building than called for by his job description. The spirits told the psychic they're comfortable at El Paso High, and they're going to wait there until they go to the next stage of whatever that may be. I next asked Reyes if there was a maze of tunnels in the basement of the building. He said there are extensive tunnels in the basement. But he said some are now closed off as a result of the work done when the air conditioning system was installed. He said originally all heating and cooling went straight up from the basement to the rest of the floor, so there are huge boilers and fans still in the basement area. And before a lot of the narrow tunnels were opened up, he said he used to have to crawl through narrow passages to get to the pipes in order to make repairs. Ray said at one time, Mr. Pankos, the former head football coach, had his office in the basement and used one of the rooms as a weight room for players. He had some experiences that convinced him to quit using the weight room. I might make mention at this point, the entire time we were roaming around the extensive basement area, I had a distinct feeling there was someone walking behind us. I could even hear the scuff of shoes on the concrete. But when I looked, I could never see anybody. I asked him about those sealed-off classrooms Mr. Tovar had mentioned, and he confirmed he too had seen those sealed-off rooms. He said at the time he had seen them, they were empty. All the debris, textbooks, student notebooks, and desks had been removed, but for whatever reason, the rooms were never used. I asked him if he'd ever heard why those rooms were sealed up, and he said as far as he knew, nobody had any idea why this happened. He then said that Andy Salcedo was head custodian prior to him taking over the job, and Mr. Salcedo and his family had lived in an apartment in the basement. He said if anybody knew why those classrooms had been sealed up, it'd be Andy Salcedo. He also mentioned that while head custodian, Mr. Salcedo had several encounters with the unknown. Years ago, he said, there used to be a fallout shelter in the basement of the school for the use of the faculty, staff, and students. As we continued to walk on this tour, I began to get a good idea of just how massive the tunnel system actually was. There's no doubt in my mind this fallout shelter was certainly big enough to hold all the students and faculty and have plenty of room left over. The supplies that were normally found in a fallout shelter were kept in the head custodian's apartment. Mr. Reyes told me when the shelter was decommissioned and the supplies were hauled out of the basement, there was a surprising amount of food and other supplies found to be stored in that apartment. I asked him just how far the tunnels ran, and he said he'd heard stories of tunnels that extend back underneath the mesa. But he didn't believe this to be the case. He thinks they were just ran underneath the old building itself. Of course, nobody really knows anything. Everything that there is to know about this school, it hides its secrets very well. I also noticed what appeared to be large archways that had been sealed with unfinished concrete. Those archways were in the side of the basement that faces the mesa. So I suppose anything is possible. He also said there's stories of tunnels running from the basement to the field house, but he didn't believe that these tunnels exist either. But Mr. Tovar, who'd been at El Paso High longer than Mr. Reyes, confirmed to me the tunnels to the field house do exist, but had been sealed off due to what's supposed to have been a partial cave-in. According to Mr. Reyes, there's a museum in the building that contains artifacts found on the property, as well as a large number of old pictures from the early years of the school. I asked to see it, but he said that was the one room in the building to which he didn't have the key. Well, at that point, we left the basement by the street exit and reentered the first floor through a tunnel that comes from the Schuster Street side of the building. He showed me the locker room used by the track team and told me the story of Coach McKillop's encounter with the Phantom Pep Rally. From here, we went to Mr. Reyes' office, which is at the end of a maze of hallways and twists and turns. Getting the key he wanted, he led me to the second floor where the auditorium is located. Now, I'd wanted to get into that auditorium, but there was a school event taking place, so this would have to be saved for another day. Across from the entrance to the auditorium is the original main entrance to this old building, and the entryway is lined with trophy cases. Now, it's unfortunate that there's no longer possible to appreciate the grandeur of this building due to the way it's oriented. Immediately in front of the entrance is the stadium, and at this time there's a great deal of construction going on, and that area is blocked off. In fact, most enter and leave the building through the rear exit that opens onto Schuster. It's in one of these trophy cases where the photo of the ghost girl that I discussed earlier is located. It's sad that these mementos of the past glories of El Paso High students are rarely seen by visitors unless they actually go looking for these cases. From here, we went to the fourth floor where a lot of unusual things have taken place. The building is four floors plus a basement. At the time it was built, there were no elevators installed. And going from the basement to the fourth floor by stairs is quite a workout. However, 7 years ago, a small elevator was installed that goes from the first floor to the fourth floor. Being a little winded from our tour of the basement, I was very grateful when Mr. Reyes told me we'd be taking the elevator. When the elevator got to the fourth floor, before he opened the door of the car, he told me
motion detected at the front door.
He's going to keep things as they were the day he saw the spectral cheerleader. By that, he meant that he would not turn on any lights. According to the story he told me that night, he had gotten a call that there was a light shining on the fourth floor. So he left the warmth and comfort of his home and entered a forbidden, darkened building. So with his familiarity with everything about this old building, he said he didn't bring a flashlight to light his way on this nocturnal errand. But even so, he was able to get about the building without any problem. The light that had been reported was burning in one of the classrooms in the science department. He said that many night calls came in about lights burning in this classroom. He always makes sure when he closes up the building that all lights are off on all floors, but this light is usually found burning. On this particular night, there was a full moon, and the moonlight was streaming through the large windows illuminating the hall. Now, this was before the current modifications. What's now a group of small classrooms was a large classroom with large windows. He started down the hallway toward the classroom where the light was burning. In the moonlight, he saw the figure of a person in the darkness. He called out to ask her who she was and what she was doing there. that point, according to Mr. Ray, as the girl darted toward the stairway and vanished. He was certain he had seen the Phantom cheerleader. And there was no question there was no one else in the building at the time. The motion detectors, always monitored by the EPISD police, showed only Mario Reyes moving about the building, though at other times the spirits have been tracked by the sensors. Now, a building the size of El Paso High School requires more than one individual to maintain the physical plant, no matter how dedicated that one man might be. And such is the case here, where Mario Reyes is assisted by a number of assistant custodians. As we walked along the darkened fourth floor, he said, told me that one of the other custodians had come to him with a strange story. He said the man had been walking down this same hallway late one afternoon in the same general area where he'd earlier seen the cheerleader. As he passed one of the classrooms, he glanced through the glass panels in the door and saw a girl dressed in a cheerleader's outfit sitting at one of the desks. The girl was leaning forward and appeared to be intently studying something lying on the desktop. Her long, dark hair hung down, making it impossible for him to see her face. Now, everything about this situation seemed so natural that the custodian took several more steps before he realized that the door to the classroom should be locked and no one should be in that room. Going back to the classroom where he'd seen the girl, he used his passkey to unlock the door and entered, but the room was now empty. There was no sign that anyone was or had been in that room since the day's classes had ended. Now, I went to EPISD to see if there was any information in the archives maintained there. And while I was looking through old yearbooks, I met Dietra Laid, an EPISD employee who was a dance instructor who had encountered something at El Paso High. She said in 1993 or 94, she and a group of students had been rehearsing in the auditorium of El Paso High. When the group left in the evening, they saw a light shining on the third floor. She said that they returned to the building to cut off the light, but when they got on the third floor, there was no light burning. When they left the building, though, the light was shining from the third floor once again. Ms. Leed said that they repeated this several times, trying to find and cut off the light before they gave up and went home. Hindsight, it was just the ghost having fun at their expense. Well, Jeffrey Allen, who was a sergeant with the El Paso Independent School District Police Department, is an experienced professional police officer. On numerous occasions, he and other officers have been called upon to enter the building after hours responding to intruder alarms. Sergeant Allen said they would check the entire building in the company of police dogs. He said more often than not, they'd finish checking the first floor, find no sign of an intruder, and then he'd hear strange sounds coming from the second floor. The responding officer would check with the EPISD alarm monitoring station, and sometimes he'd be told that even though they heard sounds, the alarms didn't show an intruder on the second floor. In spite of this assurance from the monitoring station, the officer or officers involved checking the building would cautiously move to the second floor. The dogs that in almost every case would perform professionally and superbly on the first floor get halfway up the stairs to the second floor and refuse to go any further. These big, fierce attack dogs would exhibit signs of extreme fear and try to leave the building and go back to the unit. If the officer could get the dog to go to the second floor, he'd act cowed and resist to the point of turning on the handler if efforts were made to go to the third floor. Sergeant Allen said he'd experienced heard reports from other officers about feeling air in the back of your neck as if somebody just passed by. Lights in classrooms and hallways would come on and go off without anybody near them. Voices would be heard in conversation in rooms that were empty. Toilets would be heard flushing in the restrooms. Elevators and that would be switched off with a key by the custodians would start running between floors. Doors opening on each floor as if the car had been called with the call button. According to Sergeant Allen, it was a regular occurrence to get reports of lights being on in the building. Officers would respond and confirm that there was a light on inside the building, usually on the third or fourth floor. The responding officer, sometimes with the custodian, sometimes alone, would enter the building, going to the location where the lights had been seen, but when they get to that location, the light would be off. The officer would then exit the building and go back to his car. At this time, the officer would see the light was again shining from the third or fourth floor, and no matter how many attempts are made to find the light, it's usually off when the officer reaches a room where it had been burning. But when he gets back to his car, it's back on again. Now, I asked Sergeant Allen if he could confirm that a section of the fourth floor had been sealed off as a result of odd occurrences supposedly associated with the cheerleader who was alleged to have committed suicide. And Allen confirmed that some sections of the fourth floor had been sealed off at some point in time, but he also said nobody knew for sure why this had been done. And he'd heard many stories about the Phantom Cheerleader, but he couldn't say one way or the other if the cheerleader had anything to do with the sealing off of part of the fourth floor. Then Sergeant Allen told me there were stories about the sightings at El Paso High that had raised a lot of public interest, especially on Halloween. One year, Channel 7, a local station, did a special on the ghost at El Paso High. The night before Halloween, the alarms at the school went off and officers were dispatched. When the EPISD officers arrived, the investigating officer found a group of teenagers from El Paso High School inside the building. They'd found a door unlocked. They said they were planning on catching a ghost. Well, having heard so many stories, or even some EPISD police officers and city police officers refused to set foot inside El Paso High. And it's hard to blame them for not wanting to enter the building when you stop to consider some of the things that have happened to officers inside that building. Sergeant Allen confirmed the story I'd heard about the two officers who responded to a possible burglary in progress call. Making contact with the custodian, he began to sweep the building looking for the intruder. As they mounted the steps to one of the upper floors, both felt someone pass them, between them, though neither could hear or see anything. The energy should pass so close to one officer, he or she brushed against him. And the officer later said there was no doubt that something had touched him. Quite often, on looking for intruders, officers would come across puddles of water on the floor. They'd report the leak to the monitoring station to be passed on to the custodian. But minutes later, when the investigating officer had passed back that way on the way out of the building, the water would be gone. The floor would be dry. No sign of a leak anywhere. Voices could be heard as well as the sounds of footsteps if somebody's making the rounds with the officers. And Sergeant Allen then went on to discuss the basement. He talked about the extensive tunnels that run all underneath the school and confirmed that he'd heard stories about the tunnels running back underneath the mesa. He also verified a tunnel had run from the basement to the field house, but had been sealed off for safety reasons. I asked him if he'd heard any stories about the book room, and he said he'd heard that years ago somebody committed suicide in that area. Now, when the spirit or whatever it was is active, materials disappear or be moved and returned to the original location sometimes later on. Radios and computers would turn themselves off and on without anybody nearby. I asked him if he knew anything about Coach McKillop's encounter when he heard the Phantom pep rally in the auditorium one night. Sergeant Allen replied that EPISD police officers had gone into the building in response to alarms and heard what sounds like a very spirited pep rally going on in the senior gym. When investigating officers enter the area from which the sounds are coming, the rooms are dark, empty, and silent. Sergeant Allen said he'd personally heard the sounds of a pep rally about 3 a.m. one morning, but when he got to the gym, it was empty. He also heard the sound of applause as if a performance was taking place in the auditorium. Well, the sound of lockers being shut as the students are getting their books for classes. But the building is completely empty and silent. At other times, the sounds of basketball games can be heard, with the distinct sounds of a basketball being dribbled being heard very clearly. He further said that when these sounds are heard, if the investigating officer or officers had dogs along, the animals would be fine on the first floor, but when the officer would move to the second floor, the dog would fight to get out of the building. And then there's one incident involving an EPSD police officer that I heard about when I heard two different versions of the story, though. According to Sergeant Allen, late one evening, an officer allegedly responded to an alarm call and entered the building.
Motion detected at the front door.
When he got to the second floor and was passing the main entrance where the trophy cases sit, someone or something hit the officer over the head with a trophy and knocked him unconscious. When the officer woke up sometime later, his head was split open, he was bleeding badly, his gun, radio, and keys were gone. Sergeant Allen said that later investigation did not produce any evidence that anyone had broken into the building and attacked the officer. Actually, nobody knows why the officer was in the building, and he would never speak about the situation after that. Sergeant Allen said that when officers answer a possible intruder call at El Paso High, they enter through the first floor. The hallways on this floor have no windows, and there's very little light. It's very much like being in a dungeon. And due to the many renovations and modifications done to that level, there are a lot of winding halls and small cubicles. On some occasions, he'd experienced the building itself shaking, just told himself it's the air conditioning or the blowers for the heating system coming on. However, it's interesting that nobody's reported this shaking in the building during daylight. I asked if he'd ever found burglars inside the building who'd been scared by the ghost, and he laughed and assured me that while it's not a regular occurrence, it does happen periodically. They find intruders have run into something that has scared them out of their wits. Several of the intruders have claimed to see people moving about and heard voices when there's nobody there but them. Sergeant Allen said it's somewhat nerve-wracking to hear an intruder running down the hall, have him vanish, and hear the toilets on the next floor flush, but this seems to be a common occurrence. I've been told by several people that there's been a seance held at El Paso High. I was referred to two people who'd been involved in this activity. Patty Diaz, host of the Power 102 morning show, and the Lady D, the psychic I had talked to earlier. They made a habit of investigating hauntings that are reported on the morning show. On Halloween night, they've done all-night shows from various locations around El Paso. One of the locations they investigated was El Paso High School, and I asked them to describe what happened. The Lady D said the location of El Paso High is very unusual. She's firmly convinced that there's an energy vortex on the fourth floor where lost souls can make transitions to the other side. I've heard several times that where the school now sits, there was an Indian burial ground. Patty D has confirmed that she had heard the same information. Patty D has said their investigation of El Paso High took place as a result of a telephone call to the station. And since this was the first event that she'd gone to with Lady D, Patty was a bit nervous. She joked on the air that she needed a big, strong football player to go along with her and protect her from the ghost. Well, Lady D and Patty arrived at El Paso High School about 4 a.m. Halloween morning, were met by Mario Reyes, the head custodian, and he led them inside the building. And Patty said she immediately felt the presence of something beside her. She described it as feeling like an ice pack had been placed around against her upper arm. Lady D laughed and told it was the spirit of a football player named John, who died in an accident. He had come to protect her against the ghost. Patty added they later found that the cheerleader who committed suicide on the fourth floor had been John's girlfriend. I asked when they thought this happened, and both Lady D and Patty said it was in the 70s. Sensation of an ice pack being held against her arm stayed with her till they finished the tour and left the building. Then her arm warmed up and felt normal. As an aside, Patty said that her brother used to drive down Schuster each morning on his way to UTEP. And his schedule was such he'd always pass El Paso High about the same time each morning and afternoon. And he once commented to Patty that every morning he'd see this really pretty girl in a cheerleader's outfit sitting in a window and she'd wave at him as he drove by. He thought she looked like somebody he really wanted to get to know. Well, of course, what he didn't know is this was the ghost of the dead cheerleader. On the third floor are doors that give access to the balcony that sits above the school auditorium. That morning, as they walked past those doors, they began to shake as if somebody was trying to force them open. Lady D asked Mario Reyes if he could open the doors, and obligingly he let him into the balcony. Lady D wondered about that dark balcony while Patty stayed by the door. As she stood there, Patty, being from a devoutly Catholic family, began to recite the Hail Marys in her mind. Suddenly, Lady D laughed in a very deep, sinister tone, looked at Patty, and in a voice completely unlike her own, said, "You better be saying your Hail Marys." Mario Reyes told him later that there used to be a male student who was a real troublemaker. He loved to push people's buttons just for the pleasure of seeing them get upset. And whenever there was an event in the auditorium, he'd hang out in the balcony area. He later died in a violent accident. I mentioned to Patty and Lady D that Mario Reyes had told me about seeing two people he described as a football coach and a football player sitting in a darkened auditorium when he went into it on one occasion. When he challenged the two, as I said, they both vanished before his eyes. Patty said the coach was a very well-liked instructor who had died. He used to look at the auditorium as his place to seek solace and solitude when he had a hectic day, and now he stayed there. Patty didn't mention that something had happened in the field house. Lady D said she felt a player had broken his leg there, and then she said that there had been a rape. This violent act had started out as a prank being played on a rather shy, mousy girl that escalated into a full-blown rape. She thought this had happened in the early 1960s. Nandy Salcido was a former head custodian of El Paso High for over 14 years. He talked about finding puddles of water on the floor beneath a drinking fountain. So he unplugged the fountain, mopped up the water, and when he came back from dumping the water, the fountain came on even though it was unplugged. On another instance, he was on one of the upper floors and heard the toilets flush even though he was the only one in the building. One Saturday was an event in the auditorium. Students from other schools were in the building. Salcido placed an assistant on the stairs to make sure that nobody wondered about the building. When he came back to check on things, the assistant said he had turned around to see a girl in a white skirt and a green sweater standing on the stairs. When he tried to catch her, she vanished. He was never able to find her. Well, I've got a great deal of more information on El Paso High. In fact, I could do a week's worth of shows on El Paso High. There'll be other shows. But for right now, we're going to move from El Paso to Clint High School, located on Alameda Avenue. Now, even though there's been stories about a lot of events taking place at Clint High School, I've not been able to get a lot of information. But according to what I do have in the old gym above the theater, it's been said the body of a girl who was raped by a janitor can be seen hanging from a pipe. And in the band rooms where all the instruments are stored, you can hear somebody playing an instrument at night. And I'm told that just by being in the building, you can get an eerie feeling that makes you want to go someplace else. And then there's Crockett Elementary. Quite an interesting building. I've been in it several times. The building was actually built back in the 20s, and at one point served as a hospital for war veterans. In fact, as you go in the door, there's a beautiful memorial to military veterans in the glass around the door. Been a number of stories told to me regarding events that have happened on the second floor of this building. One young child, not knowing the history of the building, had reported seeing a man walking down the hall with a bloody gauze on his head and an amputated arm. Others have reported smelling what odors similar to those smelled in a hospital in certain parts of the building. As I wandered through the building, I asked, I went in the office and there were several people there, and I said, has there been any stories about ghosts or spirits? And in unison, everybody said, only the Holy Spirit, which said to me they'd had a lot of questions about ghost being in that building. Then there's Oi Elementary, located on Campbell. 1887, a man by the name of A.V. Oi settled in El Paso. Son of Spanish nobles, he entered a Franciscan monastery at the age of 17, was ordained in 1854, and was assigned to Havana. Well, we were talking about A.V. Oi. When he got to El Paso, he saw a need that existed for education for the poor children of the Mexican families. And at that time, there was little, if any, education for the children of anybody who didn't have money. Well, he took on the monumental task of educating the children, paying the entire cost himself, fed them, and clothed them. December 1890, he felt injured himself to the point that a physician had to be summoned. When the doctor arrived, he found that Oi was starving, destitute, and living in his schoolroom, no food, fuel, or money. Well, as soon as the school board was made aware, they took steps to assist Oi. He was put on a salary, most of which he spent on the children he felt were his charges. Oi School is one of the largest Mexican schools in the country. And another thing that distinguishes this school is the fact it's allegedly haunted. But we'll talk more about that tomorrow. We've now come to the end of tonight's show because, as usual, we've run out of time. So until tomorrow night at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.